You're listening to Packers Talk Network. Packers Talk.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
This is Titletown Sound.
Prepare yourself for overwhelming intelligence.
He's going to look like Gronk riding a unicorn carrying a lightsaber.
I know how toast works.
Clay Matthews, squirrel whisperer.
Your squirrel-aiming game is not strong.
The turd cheeseburger could come back.
If one of us wants to pee on it, sure.
I'm not bailing you out on that.
I was acting unprofessionally.
I'm just here to ruin things.
Welcome to episode number 80 of Titletown Sound, the Donald Driver edition of this program. Chris is here. How are you, Chris?
I am wonderful.
Fantastic. James is here. How are you, James?
I couldn't be better.
Awesome. And Bobo is here as well. And on this edition of Titletown Sound, Chris will say some words. James will also say some words. And the main thing is we're joined by a former Minnesota Viking that we actually like. Chris Cluey is on the podcast. We're not actually kidding about that. Chris Cluey is going to be on the podcast in just a little bit. No joke. He will be here, so stick around for that. It's coming up in a few minutes. First things first, we got a little house cleaning to do. We got to talk about the Packers' recent game against the New York Giants. As I mentioned on Twitter, I got home late, so I missed the beginning of the game. And I was explicitly forbidden by you guys to watch any more of the game, lest I curse the game somehow and screw up the good thing the Packers had going. So I can't say very much because I fear you guys a lot. So
I figure if you didn't watch the game, your analysis this week should be a little better than usual.
Exactly. So defensively, though, the Packers, I hear, did exceptionally well. And James, I'll throw it to you first. What can you say about the Packers' defense after this week?
The Packers' defense, through the first four games of the season, has been better than any defense I can remember the Packers having since the 90s. It's incredible. Run defense, mainly. Pass defense has needed some work. However, this week, and I am the first one to admit that I owe them an apology, because I had Odell Beckham Jr. just going off. That was my prediction for the game. And they held him to under 60 yards, and he had one touchdown that I'm fairly certain the ref gave him, or that Hockey League gave him, because he felt sorry for him. So we couldn't have asked for a better performance. Our front seven are just amazing, and I love to watch them play, and I'm super happy that we have all those guys.
Chris, your thoughts?
I think what I'm most impressed was, despite the injuries, Capers engineered a defense that was able to hold the secondary together and hold the Giants from passing for 400 yards, which is what I feared. I feared it was going to be some sort of wild shootout and the Packers were going to have some trouble. But in the end, Capers was able to patchwork a secondary without Randall or Shields that was quite effective. And as James alluded to, the reason that it was effective is because that the defensive front is so strong that they just dropped, you know, a bunch of defensive backs there and said, you know, try to beat us. We're just going to put as many people back there as we can, and we're going to rely on our front to be able to stop the run, to get pressure. And they did. And this is, we talk about the run defense, again, historically special when it comes to the Packers. I'm really excited to see how this defense develops, and if Sam Shields can come back and stay healthy. You know, you've got a championship caliber defense as long as the offense can do its part. So I was really impressed and very happy to see how they played.
All right. Sounds like we might have to bring back the I'm a man and I was wrong segment. So
you give Capers 2 weeks, you know, he'll somehow Philip Rivers ends up throwing for 600 yards on you. So, you know, don't get overly excited, but I am excited about this D.
I mean, it was all game planning, which is what completely baffled me. Dom Capers did something, and it worked, and I don't know how to handle that.
It's very confusing, that's for sure. Also got to mention, because, of course, you guys are huge Aaron Ripkowski guys. He's your boy. So, Chris, I'm going to let you go first. Ripkowski is awesome. Please continue.
So, and seriously speaking, he played a very good game, and they used him more than they have. Eddie Lacy running behind Aaron Ripkowski is awesome. I'd love to see it. He seems to really open up holes for Lacy and make it easier for him and his style to run, you know, between the tackles. So I love to see that they're using him more. What I really like to see is they're using him more, and they're actually handing him the ball on occasion. You know, stat alert, he's averaging 8.5 yards per carry. The Ripper, one of the most prolific runners in the league. But, man, the power he ran with it, he did not want to sit down. I thought he was going to carry that pile of, you know, 18 guys with him across the goal line. It was that I was impressed. Again, not just because we are overly impressed with him in general, but because he played a very good game, and they finally, the coaching staff, used him a bit and showed how effective he can be. And hell, at this point, with as ineffective as James Starks has been, hot take, hand it to Ripkowski before you hand it to Starks.
All right, James, I'm going to ask for an analogy from you here. I love Aaron Ripkowski like...
I love Aaron Ripkowski like Kermit the Frog loves sitting on tree stumps singing songs. It makes me feel good inside when he is on the football field. And it makes me feel wholesome, and I can trust him, and I know that when he's out there, everything is over the rainbow. No, for real though, what I love about Aaron Ripkowski, and I know that I'm a fanboy and I get it and I own it and I'm cool with it, but he makes Eddie Lacy a better runner. And that is what the Packers need to do, is when Eddie Lacy is sitting in the shotgun and he takes a toss and he starts running parallel to the line, looking for some place to go, and there's nothing there. And then you look at that, and then you look at when he has Ripkowski in front of him, and he follows Ripkowski. It's like Ripkowski's Thomas the Tank Engine, and Eddie's the other one that is on the show. I lost it there. I don't know. My kids are too old for that now, but he leads the way, and it was great. And that play where he just humped 18 guys up the field for 10 yards. I seriously, it made me stand up out of my chair, and that doesn't happen very often because I'm lazy, but I got up and I was yelling, and it was great. And I was watching Packers Live tonight, and I don't know if I can say the name of the show, but that's the name of it, with Larry McCarron. And Jake Ryan was his guest, and he said the only reason that Ripkowski actually ended up going down is he went down on his own because he was scared he was going to fumble because there are so many hands on the ball. But he felt like he could carry him another 10 yards easy. So I mean, more of that.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I think our dream of having him on as a guest is going to disappear as he becomes more popular. But I'm excited to see what he can do. And, you know, for those who are calling for John Kuhn to return after his miraculous game last week, I think you saw what Ripkowski can do and how effective he can be and what he can do for this run game. And it's only going to get better.
Yeah, it's not easy being green, but it show is fun. That said,
I don't think that's right.
Well, you know, I'm going with the Kermit theme. It's not easy being sitting on a tree stump in a swamp all the time. But enough about the Chicago Bears. Do you guys have anything else to say about the Giants game?
I'm not as overreacting as others are about the offense's ineffectiveness. Rodgers had a bad game, but we're only like two Jordy drops away from the score being vastly different and people's reaction being vastly different. Though I do think Rodgers took a little bit of a step back in his fundamentals, and he was not as good as he should have been, made some obvious errors, and you hope that he can correct it like he did in the previous week.
James, final thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I went back and watched the majority of the game today, and if Jordy Nelson brings in those passes that he dropped, Rodgers would have only had one interception, and B, his stat line would have been a lot better. Also, don't forget about the touchdown that was called back because Davante Adams couldn't get his feet set in time. But, I mean, so if that play would have went you know, a half second longer and it would have counted, there's another touchdown and another completed pass. So, yes, Rodgers' fundamentals are, took a slip, but you can still see that he's working his way through it. And he looks like he's having fun at times, which is something I haven't seen in a while. The whole, hey, where you going at the cadence with the, at the line of scrimmage was awesome. It reminded me of New York Bozo, which always makes me laugh. So I think we're fighting our way through it, and it makes me happy.
All right. On that note, it's time to kick it to a break, and when we come back, we will have our definitive interview with former Vikings punter Chris Cluey. You like what I did there? Kick it to the break?
Yeah, why not?
Cluey. With the thing. I won't be here next week. Anyway, on that note, quick break, and then Chris Cluey, you do not want to miss this, folks. It was an awesome interview. We'll be right back. It's just a matter of time. Cause you got no chance. No chance in hell. You've got no chance. No chance in hell. Well, it's time to tell you a little bit about our homies at What's the Score, the sports news quiz again. On What's the Score, they test the knowledge of panelists and listeners alike, asking questions about statistics, recent events, and those memorable quotes we seem to be hearing just about every week now from the world of sports. This past week's episode of What's the Score featured two guys fighting it out at the top of the WTS leaderboard, Ian DeMars and the ever-lovable Dan Pfeiffer from WOKY The Big 920, and Marquette University Athletics, and, well, he's a voice just about everywhere these days. Upcoming shows of What's the Score are slated to include Mr. Pfeiffer, Armin Sarian, also from 920, and there's some other excitement coming down the bend with October's shows as well. To check out What's the Score, you can go to their website, WTSSportsQuiz.com. You can also check them out on Spreaker.com, iTunes, and very soon you will be able to find them on the iHeartRadio app. And by all means, please consider signing up to be a contestant on the show. Titletown Sound listeners would do pretty well on there, I'm guessing. Now I'm going to toss it back to the handsomest member of the Titletown Sound crew. You know who you are.
So we want to thank a guest tonight who has agreed to join us. We think there was some sort of paperwork error. He doesn't realize what kind of show he's on. But former Vikings punter Chris Cluey, and so much more for those of you who follow him on social media, has agreed to join us tonight. We're really happy to have him here. Chris, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no, thank you for inviting me.
So I think James wanted to start us off with a question or two.
Absolutely. Again, thanks for coming on, Chris. We really appreciate it. So, I'm not sure how much you follow the NFL or if you follow the Packers at all, but we have a guy on our team, our punter, who is, I don't want to be mean or overly critical because I couldn't do his job if I had to, but he's less than optimal.
Less than ideal?
Less than ideal. He's averaging roughly between, I think it's like 38.8 yards a kick at this point in the season.
Oh, that's not good for the first 5 weeks.
So my question to you is, 3 years retirement, if I am counting correctly, or 2 years, can you outkick that at this point?
If you gave me like 2 months to practice, yes, I could outkick that.
Okay,
then I could outkick it now, but the hang time wouldn't be that good.
At this point, it's baby steps for us. We got to learn to crawl before we can walk.
Baby steps, Bob.
So then I'll take the liberty as a Packers shareholder, which means I'm part owner. Hey, you want to come on?
I would probably have to talk to my wife about that first.
Hey, no,
I'm the stay-at-home dad right now, and I might need to find someone to pick up the kids from school.
No pressure. You get back to us when you can. You know, we'll have that contract ready for you.
Well, I mean, have you cleared it with the other 380 some odd thousand owners?
We're really popular with them. We'll get it passed.
Okay, that's good.
So I got a really dumb kicking related question.
Sure.
So why hasn't a team or why hasn't a player developed the ability to be a place kicker and a punter? Is it a stupid question? Because those roster spots are so damn valuable. I would have thought at this point, you know, you would have had someone try to specialize in both, or is it just impossible?
Yeah, so that's not actually a stupid question. I get asked that probably every 3 months or so on Reddit. A thread will pop up saying, hey, why don't teams have a player who can both punt and kick? And the short answer to it is that it's impossible. The long answer to it, going into technical kicking details, is that in college, you have guys who do both, but that's because in college you have, you know, however many people you can put on your roster that you want to have. So you have backup kickers, you have backup punters, you have guys who can take those reps during practice and save your starter's leg. Whereas in the NFL, you have a 53-man roster, 45 active on game days, which means you don't have a backup kicker or punter. And so if you have one guy doing both, he can do it for probably 6 to 7 weeks, but after that, his leg is going to explode because he's doing the punts, the kickoffs, the field goals, the punt returns, and the kickoff returns, and the field goal blocks for every day of practice as well as the games. And it's just too many reps for one person to handle. And even if you use the jugs, an NFL season is a very long season. You know, a college season is only, what, like 12 games, 13 games with a bowl game? Mm-hmm. NFL season is 16 games, 20 games if you count the preseason, which if you're a kicker or punter, you absolutely count the preseason because you're taking all those reps.
Yeah.
So it's something where physically your body can't meet those demands. And then from a technique perspective, punting and kicking are two very separate motions, where punting is more of a straight on motion that you want your leg to finish over the shoulder of your dominant side. So if I'm a right footed punter, I want my right leg to finish up around my right shoulder. And that's hard to do because your hips are designed to swivel. So normally your foot ends up over the opposite shoulder, which is fine. It's not a big deal, but kicking is more of a swinging across motion, which means, you know, if you come in and strike the ball, your leg's going to end up across your body. And so the problem arises where if you try to hit a punt where you're swinging across your body, you're much more likely to shank the ball. Okay. And if you hit a field goal where you're swinging straight through, your linemen are going to be very unhappy when the ball hits the back of their helmet. there's a lot of things working against any one person being able to do both motions. And that's not to say that it's technically impossible. I think someone could probably do it. But the thing is if someone was that athletically gifted, I think they would probably be playing another position and making a lot more money. So I don't think you'd see them as a punter or kicker.
All right. Fair enough. I appreciate the answer. So I did want to ask you, or we wanted to ask you more about your activism as well, because I know you haven't been shy about being vocal about some very important issues. So recently, I guess it was yesterday, you published an article. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, on Vox.com, dealing with the Orange Cheeto himself, Donald Trump.
Exactly. So I guess the premise was that people are excusing Trump for what he said on that Access Hollywood or whatever show it was, video from 2005. They're excusing him because he claims it was, you know, locker room banter. So if you don't mind, I'd love to hear what your take is on that.
Yeah, so I mean, as someone who actually spent time in a professional locker room, you know, not in the million-dollar Augusta Golf Club locker room or whatever it is that Trump spent his time in, like the thing is that him trying to excuse what he said as locker room banter does a disservice to professional athletes everywhere, because we don't talk like that. Like, Trump crossed a line with what he said that I have never heard in a locker room, and you know, it looking at it, it makes people think that, okay, athletes are just these troglodyte, knuckle-dragging idiots that all they can think about is run super fast, hit something, and then go drag a woman back to your cave. It's like, no, that's not what athletes are anymore. I mean, at some point in the 50s and 60s, yeah, that's probably what locker room talk was like, but we've moved past that. We've evolved. And, you know, that's not to say that there aren't stupid guys in the locker room, because there are stupid guys in the locker room. Like, there are guys who disrespect women in the locker room. I mean, you know, you have your Greg Hardys, your Ray Rices, you know, guys who make mistakes and treat women badly. But I, in my personal experience, never heard anyone talk about legit sexual assault. Like, I go up to women and grab them by the and force myself on them and kiss them when they don't want me to and get away with it because I'm rich and powerful. Like, if you said something like that in the locker room, guys would stare at you like, who the fuck are you? Like, what is wrong with you? So I think this idea that what Trump said can be explained away as locker room banter is wrong on so many different levels that, you know, we need to push back against that as hard as we can, because that's not the locker room that I know, and that's not the locker room that I want any kid growing up in and saying things like.
And so I'm the dad of two little girls, and I don't think it matters that their gender. I think it matters that, you know, we're raising kids in this world. And, you know, I was a news junkie when I was young, when I was little, and I wouldn't let them be news junkies during this election cycle. You know, I mean, and I appreciate what you said, because more than just condoning sexual assault, it's acting as if this language is acceptable, and not only acceptable, but it's seemingly encouraged, especially in locker rooms. And you would know better than most that it's not.
Right. And I think that's the biggest reason why we need to push back against what Trump said, is that it's normalizing this type of behavior, and kids learn what you teach them. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. If you teach it to a kid, they're going to absorb it and they're going to act on it. And so we need to make sure as a society that what we're teaching our kids is, hey, women are 50% of our population. They have just as much right to exist. They have just as much right to live their lives free of oppression and, you know, being mistreated as anyone else, versus what Trump is saying, that no, only men matter and you can do with a woman whatever you want because you're a man. And it's like, we have worked so hard to move past that, you know, I'm going to do whatever I can in my power to ensure that we continue moving past that, because that's not the type of society that I want to live in.
Do you think that your activism, you know, beyond the situation with the Vikings, that your activism kept you from catching on with other teams?
Oh, without a doubt. Like, that's, yeah. So that's one of the things with the NFL, is that, like, unless you're a, like, Brett Favre level quarterback or Aaron Rodgers level quarterback, right? You know,
right.
Green Bay quarterbacks, you guys are familiar with them.
We've heard of those guys, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. So it, unless you're one of those, like, transcendent talents, there is very much a sliding scale of what you're allowed to get away with versus what your perceived skill level is. And unfortunately, as a punter, or, you know, even if I'd played like a special teams position, you know, if I had been like a backup linebacker that ran down on special teams, they still would have gotten rid of me, because the NFL, and this isn't like a stated league-wide directive where they're having like conspiracy meetings or anything like that. It's more a teams don't want players who speak out on things who also aren't the face of the franchise.
Right.
So, you know, if Drew Brees speaks out on something, he can get away with it because he's the face of the franchise. You know, if Donald Driver speaks out on something, he can get away with it because he's the face, you know, one of the faces of the franchise. If Chris Cluey, punter for the Minnesota Vikings, speaks out on something, it's like, well, he was pretty good at what he did, but we can find a guy who's almost as good and won't speak out, and yeah, we're going to go with that guy.
So how do you think that that Colin Kaepernick has essentially survived and will start this weekend with how, for lack of a better term, vocal he has been, and how, you know, how he's certainly not the face of that franchise, or at least they don't want him to be, but, you know, he's actually earned the starting spot, maybe by default at this point, but how is he, I mean, do you think that's an oddity, or is there a reason?
The reason is because their quarterbacks are god awful.
I thought you were going to say the progressive Bay Area. No.
Nope. The only reason Colin Kaepernick is still on his team is because they don't have a quarterback who can play, and he's their best chance of winning. And like that's one of the sad things about the NFL, is that, you know, if you are good enough and your team doesn't have any other options, they will forgive literally anything. I mean, look at Ray Rice, you know, before all the details came out. Like, the Ravens were fully behind Ray Rice. I mean, it was, hey, he's going to suit up, he's going to play. I mean, Greg Hardy, like, they were fully behind him. Like, hey, he's going to suit up, he's going to play. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's only until the backlash gets so big that they have to get rid of that person. And, you know, I hate using those examples comparing to Colin Kaepernick, because Kaepernick hasn't done anything wrong.
Right,
like,
right.
He's standing up for civil rights. Like, he's standing up for a problem that we absolutely need to solve. But the NFL looks at it like there's distractions, and if you're good enough, we'll let you get away with those distractions. And so in the case of the 49ers, the fact that they have Blaine Gabbert as their starting quarterback, and obviously that didn't work. And
I'm shocked.
Yeah, right. You know, it's not like he has a body of work you can look back on. So
he learned the read option. Come on.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that'll totally lead you to victory in the 2016 NFL. it's not a passing league. but no, that's the thing, is that Kaepernick is still good enough and still young enough as a quarterback that the 49ers have to take the chance on him, and so they can't get rid of him. I mean, if Kaepernick had been 8-9 years older, you know, if he was like a very veteran guy coming into the situation, then they probably would have cut him by now. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of weeks, because I know from being in that position where you know the spotlight's on you and you know you have to play at your best, like, that's an extra level of pressure that you're putting on yourself. And it can be tough, because in your mind you're thinking, I have to be perfect because I know they're looking for a reason to get rid of me. And it's hard to deal with, because it's already pressure-filled enough to be in the NFL, let alone any extra that you're putting on top of it. So hopefully he does well over the next couple of weeks, and that way people can't point to it and say, oh, your activism was a distraction, that's why you're playing badly. Mm-hmm. Instead, he can just shut them up and be like, no, look, I'm a quarterback who came off leading my team to the Super Bowl not that long ago, and I still have those skills. What I do for my activism has no bearing on that.
So I'm going to monopolize the interview for just one last question before I let James ask some questions. But I know that you were very vocal in the last CBA negotiations about kind of the elite players holding up essentially the livelihoods of a lot of other players. I hope I'm not mischaracterizing that.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right.
And then, so my question is, in that CBA, with as much as they sacrificed, especially for those early, those young players, you know, your newly drafted players, your second year players, you know, with the rookie salary caps, and or did they screw their young talent, and will that eventually really hurt this league?
So here's the thing about the CBA. We didn't screw the young talent. We screwed the old talent, and we didn't realize we were doing it.
Okay.
Because the problem is that the issue we were trying to address was that rookies were getting these giant contracts. So, like, I think it was Matt Stafford, right? Mm-hmm. Got like $80 million, you know, $50 million guaranteed or whatever, not having played a down in the NFL. And, you know, was it not Jameis Winston, Jamarcus Russell. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we were trying to prevent a Jamarcus Russell situation from happening, where you have this guy who's getting paid buttloads of money and just never worked out. Because the goal was to get that money to go to the veteran players who were still playing, you know, still contributing to their teams, and to get them a bigger slice of the pie. Unfortunately, what we didn't realize would happen was that, okay, if teams could lock rookie players into a 4 or 5 year deal for minimum amounts of money, they'd just get rid of the old guys and keep locking in young guys into these, you know, super cheap deals for the teams. And I think that that's going to be a big bone of contention in the next CBA, because a lot of the veterans have figured out that, you know, we did kind of screw ourselves, and, you know, it needs to be fixed. Because right now, you know, it's like, that was one of the reasons the Vikings used and a lot of fans used for cutting me. It was like, oh, well, you know, he's a veteran. We're going to pay him $1.2 million and we can just get a rookie for $400,000. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, $800,000, that's pretty much a rounding error on a quarterback contract. So, sure, if you feel the need to save it. but you know, like I've seen that happen with, you know, linebackers and running backs and wide receivers, where it's like, okay, we have this veteran guy who's proven he can play. And yeah, he's going to command like a $3 or $4 million salary, or we can lock this rookie in for 4 to 5 years at $500,000 a year, $700,000 a year. The team is saving a lot of money from doing that. And the rookie might not be as good, but he's good enough to do the job. And in the NFL, like that's what GMs and coaches are looking for. It's no longer, are you the best? It's, are you good enough to play for what we're paying you? And I think that's unfortunate from a veteran's perspective, because you have a lot of guys who put in the time and they deserve to be paid. I mean, they've been working towards that payout and they just get cast aside. So it's kind of sucks. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that's going to be addressed in the next CBA.
I think a lot of things will be, and it may be a long process. So,
it's going to be exciting. That's for sure.
Let me I apologize. I asked about 15 questions in a row. Let me turn it over to James for a couple.
You hog. So I'm gonna take it back more over to a football perspective. But before I do, I want to just on a personal note, thank you for a lot of the activism that you've done, because it's especially with the gay marriage rights issues, because that's a subject that is really close to my heart. I have very close family members and people who I love very dearly who were affected and are affected by that. So to have somebody of your stature standing up and saying, hey, let's make things fair, has been really wonderful to see. So thank you for that.
Yeah, not a problem. And like, it's, to me, it's ultimately, we're American citizens. Like, if you pay your taxes, if you're willing to serve in the military, if you do everything that every other citizen does, then god damn it, you deserve the same rights that every other citizen does. Like, that's not a hard thing to figure out.
Exactly. And I agree. But to kind of do a 180 and go back to football now somehow. So I'm just, do you miss playing in the NFL at this point, or are you so far removed from it now that it's just, it's kind of a, you know, who I was.
I miss the paycheck. The paychecks were nice. I miss some of the, like, I miss the guys in the locker room, because when you're in the season, you see the guys in there more than you see your own family, and you get to know them pretty well. And it's, you know, it's a fun, interesting environment that it's tough to find anywhere else, simply because you know that what you've gone through and what everyone else has gone through has been so hard to reach that point that you have that shared bond of, we have suffered through just all the two-a-days and the conditioning and trying to hone your craft and perfect it over so many years to reach this spot, that it gives you that bond. But other than that, I mean, I've never really defined my life by football. Like, I like being good at sports, but for me it was never, oh, it's got to be football or bust. It was more, okay, growing up I played baseball and soccer and thought I was going to go to college for one of those, and then once I got to high school it was like, okay, well, it looks like football is going to be the way to go. So I like being good at things, but I also have so many other interests and things that I like to be good at, that once football was done, it's like, all right, well, now I'm going to move on to something else that I want to do. So it's, for me, I think for me, losing football wasn't really that big of a deal because I never defined my life by it. But I know there's a lot of guys who have difficulties once they're done, because for their entire existence, who they are has been so intertwined with the idea of being a football player that when they lose it, they're lost. They don't know how to define themselves anymore.
Right. I mean, that's something that a lot of people struggle with. You see, you know, if you do any follow-up stories on retired players, it can be pretty sad sometimes.
Yeah, well, and again, it's because for so long, like, your life has been structured around football. It's, okay, is it January? Well, I know it's the off season. I know I have until March to get myself ready to do OTAs, to get myself ready for mini camps. Okay, is it spring? Well, then I'm going to be in mini camps. I know I'm going to be weightlifting for the majority of the day. I'm going to be doing conditioning and then maybe working on some playbook stuff. all right, is it summer? Okay, now I know it's OTAs. I know I'm getting ready for the season. I'm practicing my techniques. I need to be ready to go when my name is called. And I'm fighting for a starting position. Is it fall? Okay, I know I'm playing football. We're getting ready to play games. We have to win. I have to do my best. And then the cycle repeats. And that is your life. Like, that's all that you know. And once you lose that structure, then it can be very hard to build another structure in its place. And, that's why I wish that the NFL gave more resources to guys who are finishing football and in college as well. More resources to guys who, they're not going to go play after college, but they need to have a way to transition out of that athlete mindset where everything is set up for you and figure out, okay, how are you going to operate in the real world? Because the real world is way different than the sports world. Like, your boss isn't going to make excuses for you if you show up late. He's just going to fire you and find someone else. So, yeah, that's something that I think both the NCAA and the NFL could be doing better is transition programs to help players deal with the idea that they're no longer an athlete. But that would cut into their profit margins, so we'll see if it happens.
Do you still watch the game a lot, the NFL?
I'll tune in when the Vikings are on primetime because I have quite a few Twitter followers that want me to live tweet it. but other than that, like I've never really been a sports fan. Like I don't really watch TV. I don't watch sports. I like being good at sports. Like I like playing them. But whenever I'm watching a game, in my head, I'm thinking, I could just be out doing this. Like, I could be playing this right now. Why am I watching it happen? I'd rather be playing video games.
That's a little different for me. When I'm playing soccer, I think, I could be on my couch watching this and not hurting myself.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's probably like a small bit of ADHD where, like, I just can't sit and watch something happen. Like, I need to be doing something. And so for me, whenever I had TV time, like I was never watching anything. I was always playing video games because I was able to do something. I was interacting with what was going on.
You were ahead of the curve on that.
Yeah, yeah. I blame my parents.
that's how my kids are too. And I love football, obviously, and we watch a lot of it. But my kids would, if I'm home and my kids are home, 98% of the time we're out in the yard. No matter what's happening. So
right, I owe my parents a great deal, to who I ended up being, because if it was up to me, I would have just sat inside on my bed playing video games all day or reading books. And my parents had a rule where if it was light outside, then you had to be outside. So I spent a very large portion of my childhood being outside playing sports, like running around, kicking a soccer ball around, throwing a baseball, doing things that were outdoors. And I think that that's important from a parental standpoint, is that making sure your children find that balance in their lives where it's okay to be inside and play video games and enjoy those hobbies, but it's also you need to be outside and experiencing the outside world and learning what your body can do and how to run around and what happens if you get tired and you need to push past that, because that's an important lesson to learn.
Exactly. That was profound.
Yeah. That's the white Russian speaking.
I don't think we're allowed to have that profundity on our pod.
I apologize.
Football good.
We'll bleep the rest out. Bob, I'll mark that on the tape.
Noted.
So I think one other question that we did want to ask was, and this is out of obligation as a Packers podcast.
I have a few questions, if you don't mind. You're on.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Objection.
Overruled.
I do have a few questions for the witness.
Phoenix Wright, ace attorney checking in.
Trust me, that's the smartest thing I've ever said on this podcast. You mentioned you're a stay-at-home dad, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yes. I since we've been talking activism and all the craziness and shenanigans going on in the world, I feel like I have to ask, what do you feel like is the toughest aspect of being a stay-at-home dad these days?
Toughest aspect of being a stay-at-home dad. Probably just dealing with the daily grind of, that you have to wake up, take care of the kids, make sure they get off to school. You do what you can while they're at school and then pick them up, make sure they're doing their homework. It's essentially you're giving your life up to ensure that your children will do as well as possible. And that's something, it takes a mental shift to where you're no longer the most important thing in your life. It's your kids. Your kids are the most important thing in your life. And, you know, that can be tough coming from a world like the NFL, or, you know, say you're a big business person, you know, you're running a company or something like that, to where, okay, now I'm not the center of the universe anymore. It's my kids are the center of the universe. Like, I need to make sure that they're having every advantage possible given to them because I want them to succeed in life. And, you know, like my kids, for example, are 8 and 6. Like, I'm going to be doing this for at least the next 12 years. Like, that's and that's something where if you let that sink in, it's just like, oh man, 12 years, that's a long time. But you have to weigh that against, well, I want my kids to have the same advantages that I had growing up. Like, I want my kids to be able to succeed. I want my kids to do the things that I was able to do, or even if they never do the things that I was able to do, I want them to know that whatever it is that they're doing, they were giving every chance to be the best that they could be at that thing. And to me, that's what I think a lot of people have trouble grasping or comprehending, is that it's no longer about you. It's about what can you do for your kids.
And that is a long contract you had to sign for that.
Oh, it's a very long contract. Doesn't pay a whole lot.
Definitely below the veteran minimum.
Yeah, you know, it's way below the veteran minimum. But the thing is hopefully the payoff at the end is that, you know, you've raised human beings that understand that, you know, this is the world they live in. Here's how they can make it a better place. And they understand, okay, here are the advantages that I got that other people might not have gotten. How can we change it so everyone has the same opportunity? You know, how do we make it so that everyone's kids can grow up and be who they want to be and not be brought down by where they live or what infrastructure is available to them or what their public schooling system is? It's, you know, because I think at the core of it, like, that's what our country is supposed to be about, is that no matter who you are, where you're born, who your parents are, you should have the same opportunity to succeed based on what you can do. Like, no outside influences whatsoever. It's totally up to you. And I don't think we're there yet. Like, well, no, I know we're not there yet, yeah. But that's something we should be striving towards, is that everyone gets that same chance.
Right. And speaking of kids, I have to ask about Brett Favre.
he's kind of old. I don't think he's a kid.
Well, and since it was just his birthday, I think I am legally required by the state to ask, do you have any Brett Favre stories that legally you can tell us?
I have a good Brett Favre story I can tell you.
Nice.
What was that? 2009, I think it was. That was the year we went to the NFC Championship. So one thing Brett loved to do before games was he would find guys and he'd run up behind them and smack them on the ass as hard as he could. Like, that was his thing, you know, just kind of make sure you were ready for the game. So we were playing, I think we were playing like Detroit at home, or we were playing at home. And I don't remember exactly who we were playing, but he ran up behind me and he got me. And I was just like, oh, you motherfucker. I mean, he got me pretty good. So I was like, okay, I see how it is. So I waited, you know, I waited 15, 20 minutes, you know, warm up continued. And then I waited him to finish a quarterback drill. And then I came sprinting up behind and just absolutely laid into him. And he just jumps in the air like, I think you got bone. And so, you know, I laugh, he laughs, like we go out, we play the game. And then when I come to my locker after the game, I have like 20 text messages on my phone, because apparently when I ran up and smacked him on the Fox, the Fox network affiliate that was covering the game was focused in on Brett Favre at that moment. So I got to hear from all my friends and family, why did you just slap Brett Favre on the ass really hard?
Brett Favre, questionable with a buttock.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm pretty sure we ended up winning the game, so it all worked out. But
All right. Yeah. I have one last question if nobody else has any more. I don't know. You guys got anything?
I've got a couple.
Oh, okay, God, I'm sorry. I can't. Actually, see, that's my role is to cut off Bobo.
He just relishes that role. Actually, I was just reading Jared Allen was just saying the same thing about Brett slapping your butt really hard.
Oh, yeah.
I guess he said something about how it was hard to explain to your wife when you got home why you have a man's handprint on your
butt. Right, yeah. Like, I'm telling you, like, he would legit, like, this was full on. He's going to knock you over if you're not ready for it. And it was just like, all right, well, that's Brett.
All right, I got one more question, and this will probably be a quickie. I'm way behind on my video games. I was still playing an Xbox 360 until my 360 finally crashed, so I have to ask you, I know you're a video game guy, mm-hmm. PlayStation, Xbox, or PC?
Wherever the good games are at. So that's something I've never really limited myself by console. Like, right now, I have a PS4, which I got for Bloodborne, and then picked up Destiny and No Man's Sky on it. Most of my gaming right now is on PC, just because none of the Xbox One or PS4 games that are out have really made me want to buy them. But yeah, for me, it's all about, is the game good or not? So, like, if there's a good Wii U game, so for example, Xenogear Chronicles or Xenoblade Chronicles, like, that the sole reason I bought a Wii U was to play Xenoblade Chronicles. And then I also picked up, you know, quite a few games for my kids for it, because the Wii U is great for kids games. But like, for me personally, it was, okay, I thought that game was going to be very good, and I sunk quite a few hours into it, so it was worth it. But if there is a good game, then that's what I'm going to go after. It doesn't really matter what system it's on.
All right. I have no further questions for this witness, Your Honor.
Sustained! All right, just one more. And so I've got to ask this one. Is that horn as f***ing annoying to you as it is to us?
Oh, God. The Gajaller horn?
Please say yes. Please say yes.
Me and Longwell would joke about that on the sideline all the time. It was like, so basically, whenever anything went wrong, we would turn to each other and just go, baroo, baroo. Like, for us, that was the sound of failure. If you hear that noise, something has gone wrong somewhere, and it's going to be hilarious. So, yes, the Gjallar horn, I guess, gets the fans pumped up, but yeah, I don't know.
All right, well, Chris, I want to thank you so much for joining us and talking about just about anything we could think of. We can't thank you enough, and you know, if you ever want to come back, you just let us know. We'd be happy to have you.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. And yeah, just send me an email whenever. It's I've got free time now. I'm the stay-at-home dad, so got plenty to talk about.
Awesome. Thanks again.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, Titletown Sound listeners. We appreciate you listening to us every week. And we have a question, a favor actually, to ask. Could you give us a rating? Look, does the podcast make your ears bleed? No? Good. Then give us a rating on iTunes. It helps us so that people can find us easier, can search us, and our podcast shows up in the ratings. When you rate us and give us a review, it makes us more visible. And hey, don't you want others to have to suffer through this podcast just like you do? Thanks in advance. We appreciate your help.
And our thanks once again to Mr. Chris Cluey for taking time out to talk with our silly little selves. So do you guys have any post-interview notes you want to make here? Because all I can say is Chris Cluey was an awesome guy to talk to.
I just appreciate that he was willing to literally talk about any stupid subject we wanted to. And we threw some stupid ones at him. So hats off to him to join us on our piddly little show. What a good time.
Yes. Well, stupid questions are what we do best. But anyway... James, any other thoughts?
Yeah, it was a blast. It was a blast, and as much as it pains me to have any sort of affection for any person associated with the Vikings ever, He's now one of two Vikings that I, or former Vikings that I really like. So thanks to him for coming back, coming on. And, it was fun.
Yep. Good times. And on that note, it's time to have fun with our listeners. It's time for Twitter questions. And we have one Twitter question this week. It is from, and of course, I'm probably going to mess up the last name. I apologize in advance, as I do every week. Jared Hutaling. Hope I got that right. At Titletown 1929. And he says, over under on sack total for Fackrell this year. I'll go with 7. So the question posed here, over under sacks for Kyler Fackrell at 7. Currently he has 2, one each in the last 2 Packers games. So Chris, I'll throw it to you first. You going to go over or under Kyler Fackrell sacks there?
This is nothing against Fackrell, but I'm going to go under just because there's only so many sacks to go around, and you've got a lot of other dynamic players on that defense that are going to get there. So 7's a pretty good number, and I think if he gets near 7, people are going to be thrilled with that number. So I'm going to say under. I'm tempted to go over just because he's got the 2-sack head start, but damn if he isn't looking good. I know that much.
Yeah, he's my boy. James?
Yeah, I'm also going to go under, and it's nothing against Fackrell, because I've been really impressed with him, especially the last 2 weeks, the improvement that he's shown. I remember during OTAs and during training camp, he wasn't really doing a whole lot, and he looked kind of like a bust, but he's really improved a lot and made a name for himself. But like Chris said, there's so many people that are going to get their fair share of sacks, and there's only so many of those to go around. So I think he'll get around 5 or 6 is probably tops for him, but he's going to make splash plays, just not in that manner.
All right. You know what? I'll be optimistic and go over. I think I mentioned a few weeks back, Kyler Fackrell's maybe kind of my favorite rookie this year. So I'm rooting for the guy. I dubbed him Kill Switch a few weeks ago as well, so I want to keep using that nickname as much as possible. And maybe it'll stick, you know. Maybe it'll be on a t-shirt or something. That'd be cool. And then maybe we'll get Chris Cluey a shirt like that, and he'll wear it. It'll be awesome. Still tripping out about that. Anyway, on that note, it is time, gentlemen, for True False. Currently in the True False standings, 2 of us last week had 1 out of 5 correct, and would you care to guess which 2 of us had only 1 correct last week?
I'm going to say, Bobo, you're one of them.
That would be correct.
And I'm afraid that I'm the other one.
That is also correct. Well done, and I wish I could count that toward your score this week, but yes, we went 1-4, James and Jeremy both 3-2 last week. So well done, gentlemen. James, you currently have the true-false lead with 11 correct answers and 10 incorrect. So you're actually over 500.
Holy mackerel.
We don't take too kindly to that kind of a record around here. Jeremy is in second with a 10-11 record. Chris and I bringing up the rear at 9-12. We know all about bringing up the rear, but never mind that now. True-false...
I don't understand what you're talking about.
I don't either.
It's probably better.
It's past my bedtime, and I'm just losing it. So, quickly to true-false number 1. Aaron Rodgers throws for more passing yards than Dak Prescott. Rodgers averaging 219 passing yards per game. Prescott averaging 247.8. Rodgers threw for 259 yards last week with a number of drops, of course, by wide receivers. Prescott had 227 last week. His average is brought up a little bit by a 292-yard game against Washington back in Week 2, so consider that for whatever it's worth. So, Aaron Rodgers throws for more passing yards than Dak Prescott. Chris, true or false?
True. I'm fanboy this week. I think the offense is going to get it together, and I do think he's going to outpass good old Zach Prescott. Dak, too. Dak, too.
Best friend of Steve Peterson.
He was great on Saved by the Bell.
All right, so Chris says true. James, what say you?
I'm gonna go ahead and say true as well. I think that if they're gonna tighten up the screws a little bit and get everything right, and I feel like this could be a potentially season. Like
a statement game, right? Is that what you're
looking statement
for?
Game? Yeah, this could be a game for Aaron Rodgers to come back and say, "Look, I never went away, and I'm here, and here we are." So
he'll probably throw in a shh while he's at it, you know, all that good stuff.
Sure. All right, I am going to go with the averages on this, and I'm going to say false. But you know, if the Packers get up early, Dallas will have to throw the ball a lot. So it's no knock on Aaron Rodgers by any means. True, false, number two, the Packers rush for at least 112 yards. Packers average 112 yards on the ground, 12th best in the league. Lacy specifically, if you're wondering, is averaging 73.8 rush yards per game. Dallas allowing about 95 rush yards per game currently. So again, the Packers rush as a team for at least 112 yards. Chris, true or false?
This is a tough one because I don't know about Lacy's health and whether or not he's going to be, whether he'll even be active. I'm going to play the odds, and because there's a possibility that he doesn't play, although they've said his ankle injury isn't a big deal, I am going to say false. They do not run for 112 yards.
All right, James.
I have a feeling that Lacy's not playing this weekend. I don't know why. He's had a couple of ankle injuries in the past, and yeah, they were on the other ankle, but he's a big dude, and ankle injuries don't just go away for big guys. So I just have a bad feeling that he's probably going to be sitting this one out. And if it's James Starks back there, it might be negative 112 yards. So I'm going to go ahead and say false.
All right. I feel like I'm already in catch-up mode in true-false, so I'm going to say true. Just for that. So moving on to true-false number three, and this is probably the big one of the week. Ezekiel Elliott rushes for at least 90 yards, 90. Elliott leads the league in rushing yards with 546. That is 85 yards better than the next best rusher, DeMarco Murray, who has 461. Elliott averages 109.2 rushing yards per game. The Packers have been allowing an average of 42.8 rushing yards per game. Quite the disparity there. This is strength on strength. Basically, irresistible force meets immovable object. So Ezekiel Elliott rushing for at least 90 yards. Chris, true or false?
Well, first, Bobo, I'd like to say you are an irresistible force. But second,
thank you.
I can't not trust this defense now. They've taken us far enough. They've been so strong, so I'm going to have to say that is false. He will not get, what was it, 90?
90.
Yeah, he won't come close to 90 as individually.
All right. James, what say you?
I got to ride the defense until they give me a reason not to. And I know that they haven't played any world-beating running backs, although they did play one child-beating running back. But I'm going to say that Ezekiel Elliott will not get 90 yards this weekend.
All right, so false there as well. Tough call for me because I want to join the crowd on this one. But as I said, I am playing catch up here before the midway point in the season. I'm actually going to say false as well. Maybe somebody else will get some rushing yards, but probably not. So we are going to sweep on that one, and we will be getting Jeremy's true-false answers before the game. Oh, don't you worry there. True-false number four, Jordy Nelson records at least 61 yards receiving. Dallas is 21st against the pass, having allowed 1,353 total yards to receivers so far this year. Jordy averages exactly 61 receiving yards per game. He only had 38 against the Giants last week. So it really comes down to, do you think this is going to be a Jordy-heavy kind of a game or not? So Jordy Nelson recording at least 61 yards receiving against Dallas. Chris, true or false?
I'm going to say true. Jordy, without drops, is going to be much better last week, and this week he's going to correct that a bit.
All right, James.
I hate to keep agreeing with you, Chris. I really do.
Based on my record, it's not a good move.
I know. That's why I hate to do it. But I Jordy's not going to let a repeat happen of what happened this week. He's going to get his yard, so I'm going to go true.
All right. I'm going to say false. I thought you guys might agree on this, so I have to be the contrarian here. and say that everybody else on the Packers team gets at least 150 yards receiving, leaving Jordy with just like five or thereabouts. True, false, number five, the Green Bay defense records at least one interception. Packers only have a couple picks through four games, and Prescott has not thrown an interception yet through five games. Some say he's due. I might be that somebody, but, you know, that's just a rumor. The Green Bay defense records at least one interception. Chris, true or false?
True, and I'll bet you it's multiple interceptions. I think if you look, they only have how many? What, two over the last several games? But they have had so many interceptions bounce off of hands. I think this is the week it comes together. They don't make those drops, and you know, we get a couple of interceptions on good old Zach Prescott.
All right. James, true or false?
Well, just like I have to stick with the run defense until they prove otherwise, I got to stick with the pass defense until they prove otherwise. And I've been watching footballs bounce off their hands like they were all 2015 Devonta Adams out there. So I'm going to go ahead and say that we get no interceptions this weekend.
All right. Finally got you two to disagree on something. I feel like I'm having an off week. I, too, am going to say false. I think we had a question like this a couple seasons ago when the Packers were going up against Nick Foles in the Eagles offense. And Foles had, like, a ridiculous touchdown-to-interception ratio, and I thought, oh, he's totally due for an interception. And then he throws for 17 touchdowns and no picks. So, whatever. I'm going to say false on this, agreeing with James. And on that note, we have completed true-false. It's time to move on to spread 'em.
All right, hands on the hood and spread them.
Bovada.lv has the current line as of Tuesday at Green Bay -4. Last week, by the way, was a push because the spread was Green Bay by 7. They won by 7. So everybody gets a draw on that one, apparently. I guess we get a draw on that, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. So, sure, why not?
Okay. It makes me feel better, because otherwise I would have been wrong. So the current line, again, Tuesday night, Green Bay -4. Chris, are you going Packers beat the spread or not?
I will take the Packers laying the points. They hadn't beaten the spread until this week, and then they pushed, so that's good enough for me. We're trending upward.
Fantastic. James?
I'm going to go ahead and... I've gone back and forth on this one, the whole podcast in the back of my mind, thinking about what I'm going to do. I think the Packers win, but I think it's going to be close, so I'm going to go ahead and go against the spread.
Going with Dallas, then.
Yeah, I'm taking Dallas in the spread. Green Bay for the game, Dallas for the spread.
Gotcha. Alrighty, I am going to go with Green Bay as well. Just a quick question. If I call for the push, do I get bonus points for that?
There's no betting the push.
Oh, weak. Salt and Peppa will be so disappointed.
Oh, man.
I'm so sorry.
But
I'm
how
so
will
tired.
Spinderella feel about it?
I don't know, and I don't care.
Let me bring you back to the subject.
All right. Stop.
That's a lyric from one of their songs.
Stop, collaborate, and listen.
I'm
time
so
to wrap
sorry.
Up the show. Oh, dear. All right. Website.
Can we bring Chloe back?
Probably a good idea. It's fourth and long on the show. It's time to punt. TitletownSoundOff.com is the website. We got stuff going up all the time. James has got something up. Recently, Chris had something up. You had the book review, correct, Chris?
Yeah, and it looks like we're going to be able to have Jeff Perlman on next week. No promises, but hopefully we work everything out. But there's a book review of Jeff Perlman's new book, Gunslinger. Spoiler alert, it's really good.
All right, you heard it here first. Jeff Perlman and Chris Cluey fight to the death on this podcast next week. Twitter handles, you can always tweet at us, at TitletownSound. You can tweet at me. If you're really bored, I guess you can tweet at me. At That's Our Bobbo. Chris's Twitter is...
at TTSO_Chris.
And James's Twitter is...
at JK sub 20.
Fantastic. You can follow us. You can tweet us. You can do pretty much whatever you want on Twitter. And we like it, whatever it is. Also, we have a voicemail number if you want to call in and leave us a voicemail. We had one from our buddy Austin, I think, this past week.
We did. We're going to have to get it together for later in the week, probably.
Yes, we didn't get a chance to play it this week, but do you have that voicemail number handy, Chris? Because I never do, of course, when I bring this up at the end of the show.
Yeah, I notice you don't. So our hotline is 920-445-8876. That's 920-445-TTSO.
Beautiful. And that, again, that number's open before the game, during the game, after the game.
It's literally a voicemail, Bobo. It's open all the time.
It never closes.
It's open all the time. It's just like Twitter. It's always open. On that note, James, do you have anything you want to say quick?
I would like to apologize for my lack of analogies this week. I feel like I let you guys down. Like that time that I was the shortstop in my Little League Baseball, and I decided that I didn't want to field the ball because I'm just going to ramble on until you stop me. So,
please stop.
Okay.
All right. On that note, Chris, do you have anything you want to say before we wrap?
I do. Good night, Prince Janice. Try not to run into Jordy anymore.
Yes, that would be a very good idea. And I, of course, will remind you to pet your cat. And hopefully we will have Jeremy back next week. Jeremy was off on another planet this week. Hopefully we'll have him back. But, you know, Jeremy and the space program, they're like that. I'm crossing my fingers.
I heard he took a trip to Uranus.
Keeping it classy.
And Uranus takes us to the end of the podcast. Good night, everybody. Sometimes you wanna go where everybody